My name is Pepe, and I'm a drug addict. You know, tonight I'm going to speak on the 12 steps, 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. But before that, I'm going to say that, you know, one of the things that bothered me for a long time when I got here was trying to figure out the difference between my will and God's will. You know, I asked myself that many, many times. You know, how do I know when what I'm doing is my will or is it God's will? You know, and every time I did anything, I would ask myself, is it God's will that I buy this automobile? Is it God's will that I get into this relationship, or is that my will? Is it God's will that I get this job or that job, or is that my will? And I couldn't understand, and I couldn't figure out the difference between what my will was and what God's will was. And I used to ask a lot of people, how do you tell the difference? How do you really tell the difference when you're doing God's will or whatever you're doing is your will? And you know, for a long time, nobody could answer that question. Nobody can give me an answer that I could really accept. And I remember one time somebody told me, well, if it happens, it's God's will. You know, but I thought about that and I said, you know, I can make things happen. You know, if I decide I want to go out and lay a newcomer, you know, and it happens, would that be God's will? Or would that be my will? So I couldn't accept that. I really couldn't accept that. So like I said, for a long time, for many years, I used to ask myself that question over and over and over and over again. Eventually, the answer came to me. But before it came, there was a lot of things that I had to learn in order to understand what the answer was. And you know, I realize now that the answer didn't come from this program. And I'll tell you why. See, because Narcotics Anonymous does not teach you the meaning of spirituality. That's up to the individual. You know, in step 11, it talks about this program encourages you to get back to your church if you ever belong to one, or get involved with the church, or get involved with some kind of spiritual teaching. Anything that would help you get some kind of understanding of God. Because this program does not teach you that. It leaves it up to the individual. So I didn't get my answer here in this program. I got it after becoming involved with many, many different spiritual curriculums. And when the answer came, I knew it was the answer because it coincided with everything that I had been involved with. They all agreed on the same thing. See, and today I believe that God's will for me is that I have peace of mind. That's it. That I have peace of mind, whether I have $1 million or whether I'm broke. Whether I'm in a beautiful relationship or whether I'm having trouble with my relationship. Whether I'm in perfect health or I'm sick. Whether my children are nice and healthy and running around, or whether in their wheelchairs. God's will for me is to have peace of mind and go through that experience with peace of mind. That's what God wants me. God wants for me. You know, that's something I've never had. I've never had peace of mind. I don't know what it is. You know, as far back as I can remember, my mind has been full of conflict, full of pain. My whole life has been full of fear. It's been full of doubt, of anger, of envy, of self-loathing, of self-hatred, of jealousy. My mind has been full of turmoil as far back as I can remember. I don't know what peace of mind is. Now I understand. When I first came here, that they told me, Pepe, your problem is not the addiction. I mean, your problem is not the chemical. Your problem is something deeper than that. See, the chemical is the symptom, is nothing but a symptom of a deeper underlying cause. And the cause is my thinking. That's my problem. My problem is my thinking. My problem is the thought system that I believe in and live by. And the thought system that I have believed in and lived by all my life is the thought system of fear. That's my problem. See, and fear is a foundation of a thought system that is called the ego. Today I don't have a drug problem. I have an ego problem. And in fact, that has been my problem as far back as I can remember. And not only is it my problem, but it is the problem of the world. This is why I am completely helpless when it comes to my addiction. And that's why my life is unmanageable. You know, I look back, you know, after I begin to realize that and really understand it, then the steps of this program really begin to make sense to me. Really begin to take a deeper, deeper meaning. You know, the first step says that we are powerless over our addiction and that life is unmanageable. Let me paraphrase that. And I'll paraphrase it this way. I am powerless over my ego, and because of that, my life is unmanageable. And the reason why my life is unmanageable is because the thought system I live by is one that is completely and totally insane. Okay. See, the ego is insane because the ego believes that it is what it is not. The ego believes it is separated from God. That's why it's insane. And believing that it is separated from God, even though it is not, it suffers the effects of that belief. And the effects of that belief is separation. And because it believes it's separated from God, it does not have the ability to know knowledge. All it can do is perceive. See, because the ego, in other words, is the part of my mind that doubts the existence of God. And because of that, it can never come out with any meaningful answers. It can only ask questions because it's a part of our minds that's forever in doubt. And because it's always in doubt, how could it manage my life? And when I understood that, then the first step really began to make sense to me. You know, really began to make sense because the ego, all it is capable of doing is making illusions. That's all it can do. And my problem has been, I've been trying to get these illusions that my ego has made and tried to make them real. And because of that, I've suffered very badly. Let me explain what I mean by that.
Where's that? Right here.
Oh. Thank you. See, when I came here, I knew I was a drug addict. There was no doubt in my mind that I was a drug addict. I got busted for my first possession in 1947. And from 1947 until 1962, when I came to stay in this program, I've spent 70% of that time locked up in institutions just for drugs. I've been all over the United States. I've been to Lexington, Kentucky. I've been to Fort Worth, Texas. I've been to Leavenworth, Kansas. You know, I've been to Terminal Island. I've been around. just for drugs. When I was a young boy, I was in a federal reformatory in Alvin, Oklahoma, and I used to live in East LA. Just for drugs. So there was no doubt in my mind that I was a drug addict. But yet, and I was unaware of this, yet deep back in my mind, I still believed that if circumstances were different, if the situation was different, if I had those breaks in life, if I had those things that the world says, if you get these things, then you'll be happy. The money and the job and the home and the nice lady and a beautiful automobile. If I had these things, then I would be happy. Then I would be all right. Then maybe I could manage my life. You know, I really believe this. I didn't realize it, but what I was doing is I was believing in an illusion. See, because this program tells us the truth. If you be an addict, you are powerless over your addiction and your life is unmanageable. I heard the truth every time I came to a meeting. And I had been clean and sober for 6 months when I got out of the joint in 1961. And then I went back out to use. And when I finally got back, I ended up in a place in Santa Monica called Synanon. I went there to kick because I couldn't stop by myself. I had something going physically that I just couldn't stop alone. I needed some help. You know, and you know what? I'm grateful to Chuck Diedrich and those people at Synanon, Jack Hurst and the people that were there. Because during the little time I was there, they took care of me. They treated me with love and respect. And they took good care of me, made sure that nothing would happen to me while I went through this physical withdrawal. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. I went into Synanon on December the 6th of 1962, and I left Christmas Day of 1962. But during the time I was there, at Synanon, the miracle happened in my life. And what happened was that this program had finally affected me. Those 6 months that I had been coming to meetings over and over and over every night, they affected me. And it was sort of like when I got there, I saw it clearer than I had ever seen it before in my life. And I realized that there was no way on earth that I could ever use anything and get away with it. I saw it. Like I said, I saw it clearer than I had ever seen it before. What happened was this program, the power of this program, the love of this program penetrated this dark mind of mine enough that there was a little light came on. And that's the way I feel, like a little light went on and I saw the truth. You know, and you've heard it many times, know the truth, because the truth will set you free. Know the truth because the understanding of the truth will set you free. It will set you free from those illusions that are holding me down. And the illusion was that I could control my life. I saw it. I saw that it was an illusion and I could never, never make it real. I could never make it real. And from that day to this day, I have never had an obsession to use. And I think the reason for that is because the obsession was part of that illusion that I let go. I don't have any illusions today. I know I can't use. And when that happened, I realized that I had really taken the first step. That of myself, I was powerless. Of myself, I'm referring to the small self, the ego mind. It has no power, it has no control, it's insane. How could it run anything? And that was my problem. I realized that that was my problem. That's why my life was completely a shamble. You know? And when I really took my first step, without even realizing it, I was ready for the second step. And the second step says, come to believe that a power greater than yourself can restore you to sanity. That power that I've come to understand and know is not a power outside there or out in a church or on a holy mountain. That power I'm talking about is the other part of my mind. See, because since I believe in separation, my mind seems to be split or in two parts. One part is called the ego and the other part is called the spirit part of my mind. That's the part that is still in complete contact with its creator. That part knows the truth. See, there isn't anything that I can do to learn the truth because I already know the truth. And that truth is within me. Now, the reason why I come to so many meetings and the reason why I read a lot is because these things help me to remember the things that I've already known. It helps me to awaken to what I already know. And this is what this program is telling us, that if we work these steps, we will awaken to the truth. We will become awake to the truth. And that part of me that is the part of God is the love that is within me, because God is love. See? And I am part of that love. See, when God created me, he didn't make something other than himself. It's impossible. What he did, he projected of himself. He made more of himself. He extended of himself. He extended his mind. That's who we are. We are an extension of God's mind. And that extension has been referred to in many, many ways. It's been referred to as the collective unconsciousness, or it's been referred to as the universal mind, or the sonship, or the Christ mind, or the Buddha mind. It's the same thing. It's the extension of God's mind. That's who we are. See, God only made one son. There's only one of us in here. That mind that was in the Master Jesus is in you and I and all of us. It's the same mind. It isn't that his mind and my mind are identical or similar. No, it's the same mind. God only extended his mind, and we are all part of that mind. This is why when I give to you, I give to myself. When I attack you, who am I attacking? Myself. And our program tells us in order to keep what we have to give it away. Because who are we giving it to? All I give to you, I give to myself because you are part of me. You are a reflection of me. And before I can ever see the God in me, I have to see the God in you. Or I will never see it in myself. And when I begin to understand this, that this power is within me but not of me, I begin to understand that here was my answer. You know, in this program, we have many, many principles. You know, there's a principle of humility, the principle of honesty, the principle of courage. You know, we call them spiritual principles. What they are is they're attributes of love. See, there are only two thought systems in this universe. And we believe in one or the other to be true every minute of our lives, even when we're asleep. And there is never a time when we can believe in both of them at the same time. See, because the only two thought system that exists is the thought system of fear and the thought system of love. They're the only two. And if you examine your mind at any given time, whatever thought you have in your mind at that time falls under the category of either love or fear, because they're the only two that exist. And like I said, there is never a time when you can believe in both at the same time. It's impossible, because love and fear cannot coexist. You cannot worship two masters at the same time. It's completely impossible. And my problem is that I've been worshiping the master called fear. That's all I have known. And it isn't something that I created on my own. Fear is something that I was taught by this world. From the minute I left my mother's womb, I was taught fear. Because this is the thought system that the world teaches. And I'm so grateful to this fellowship, because when I got here, I didn't realize it at the time, but this fellowship was about to introduce me to a thought system completely contrary to the one I came in with. And the thought system of this fellowship is the thought system of love. This is what we teach here. We teach only love. And not only do we teach it by what we say, but we teach it by our demonstration. Because how we demonstrate our lives, you know, attests to what it is that we really believe. And what I believe teaches other people and myself. You know, you cannot give something away that you don't have. And you know, I realize now that all my life I have been teaching devastation and fear, because that's all I knew. I have been sending out vibrations of fear as far back as I can remember, and I want to stop. I really want to stop, because this world is in bad shape right now. Look at what we're doing. They're shooting each other down and like dogs. They're shooting at each other on the freeways. They're going by the schools and killing each other. Look at what we're doing to our children. We're molesting them and kidnapping them and killing them. This world is sick. I don't want to contribute those kind of vibrations into this world anymore. And like I said, I'm so grateful to this fellowship because this fellowship is teaching me a thought system completely contrary. When I got here, especially after I took one of my steps that says I humbly ask God to remove my shortcomings, I realized that I only had one shortcoming. I only have one, it's fear. But for a long time I thought I had many because fear manifests itself in many ways. It manifests itself in anger and in violence and in fear and in lack and in jealousy and malice. It's all fear. It's all fear. So that's why I thought I had many, but it's not. I only have one because there are only two thought systems. And these are the things that I have been vibrating. This is what I've been teaching the world, because this is all I have to teach. And you know what? We're all teachers, whether we like it or not. But what we teach is something that we have a choice. For a long time, I didn't have a choice. But today I do because of this fellowship. I have a choice of what I want to teach the world, what I want to teach myself, and what I want to teach my family. And that power is within me. It's within me. It's not of me, but it's within me. And this is what I want. Because if I can come from the love within me, what I'm doing, I'm coming from the highest within me. I'm coming from the best within me. I'm coming from the God within me. You know. And then when I can do that, I become that magnificent person I've always wanted to be. I've always wanted to be a kind person and a gentle person. And a loving person. You know, I've been to a lot of places in my life, a lot of insane places, and I have never met a man or a woman yet in my life that all they wanted was to love somebody and to be loved. Because basically this is our desire. You know, we still remember how it was in an ancient time back somewhere. We still have the memory within us, how it was when we were at one with God. And we want to go back home. We want to go home. We know we don't belong here. We know this isn't our home. We want to go back home. And whatever we're doing, what we're really doing is, there's only two calls in this universe. One is, I love you, and the other is, will you please love me? Whatever you're doing, you're either asking for love or you're giving love. And this is what this program is teaching us. And when I begin to understand that power, the power of love, because that's the only power there is, you know, and love is an idea. You can't see it, you can't touch it, but when it's in a relationship or when it's in a room or what's in, whether it's in anything, it is undeniably there. It's in this room right now. I can feel it. And I know I'm not the only one. It's here. It's undeniably here. And this is what this program is teaching me. And when I can understand that that's the only power, how easy it is for me to take the third step and say, I turn my will and my life over to the care of this power. And when I say my will, I'm talking about my thinking. Because to will something is to think it. My thoughts. And my thoughts are my thoughts of my ego. I can't control that. I give that to God. Take my anger and my lust and my envy and my hatred and my doubts and all this stuff that is making me sick, and I give it to you. Let you change it. Let you make that correction. Let you perform that miracle. See, and this is why this program is a program of miracles. See, a miracle is nothing less than a correction. That's what a miracle is. It's a correction. And the thing that what happens is that miracles should happen naturally and spontaneously as a result of the love that I was talking about. Our natural love. You know, and that love should flow natural. And the love I'm talking about is the love that flows from one heart to another heart to another heart. To another heart, to another heart. Remember, there's only one of us in here. And whenever miracles don't happen, is because that love has been interrupted. And the thing that interrupts that love is our anger and our malice and our hatred and all our ego shit. That interrupts the love, the natural flow of love. And when I understood that, I realized that that was my enemy. That's my problem. My ego is my problem. And one thing that I understand, that I began to understand about the ego, you know that the ego is forever trying to obscure the truth about myself. And this is why for such a long time, I used to have trouble accepting a compliment. See, because deep down inside, I didn't like myself. I didn't realize that until I took my fourth step. You know, in order to build a beautiful and holy relationship with anybody, whether it's your mother or your father or your wife or your sister or your brother or your husband or your lover, whoever, in order to build a holy relationship, and by holiness I mean a full relationship, a beautiful relationship, one of communication and one of understanding and one of fairness, it takes a lot of work. It takes a lot of work on both parts, you know. Well, the same thing is true with the relationship that we have with ourselves. I didn't realize it until I got here that I hated myself. I didn't realize how much I hated myself until I got here. In fact, I hated myself so much that there at the end, I almost killed myself. You know, I have been trying to run away from Pepe all my life. I have been trying to do something that is completely impossible. I have been trying to separate myself from myself. No wonder I've been neurotic. See, because as Freud defines neurosis, it is separation of self. And I've been trying to do this all my life because I hated myself. And when I got into my fourth step, I began to understand and see all these things that I hated about myself. You know, for a long time, I didn't want you to get close to me. For a long time, I used to believe that if you saw who I really am, you wouldn't want to have anything to do with me. So what I did all my life is I built a mask, and I built a wall, and I would only let you in so far. And I wouldn't let you in any closer than that, because if you got past that wall, you would see who Pepe really was. And when you saw that, you would turn and run with horror. That's the opinion I had of myself. It was such a bad opinion. And I never realized it until I got here that my self-image determines my experiences in life. Not only that, but my self-perception also determines who I invite into my life. You know, if I believe I'm an asshole, I'm going to invite people into my life who are going to treat me like an asshole. Yeah. Because I have to do this, or if I didn't, I would contradict what I believe about myself. I have to create these experiences in my life in order to prove to myself that what I believe about myself is true. The ego believes what he makes. And I had never known this before. I never knew this. And for that, I always thought that the reason why I was having so much trouble in life, that the reason was is that it was your fault. I always blamed people, places, and things. Because the ego never takes the blame for anything. Never. It finds an escape route. You know, there's a little story that one of my teachers, talks about. And she talks about this little story that many years ago, there was this ancient tribe. And what they used to do is once a year, they used to get a goat and bring it into this tribe, into the village. And everybody in the village would go and they would project their fear and their anger and their guilt on this goat. And when the whole tribe would do this, then what they would do is they would get the goat and they'd take them to the end of the village, throw rocks at him and chase him away, and there went all their junk. See, because that's the way, you know, that's the way the ego mind works in a sense. See, because the ego mind knows that it has to get rid of this guilt and this fear and this anger, because if it doesn't, it will kill the body. And it's been proven, medically proven, that stress, which is caused by fear, is the cause of every disease that exists. It causes ulcers, it causes migraine headaches, it causes high blood pressure, heart problems, drug addiction, alcoholism. Fear causes dis-ease. And love is peace of mind. I've never been healthy. I've always been full of dis-ease. And this is why I have to watch myself very carefully, that I don't fall into a trap and let my ego run away with me and become angry at you and hate you, because that hatred will literally kill me. You know, something happened in my life after I was clean and sober for quite a few years. I found out that my two sons were sick. I have two sons with muscular dystrophy. And I didn't know what it was in the beginning, and later on I realized that muscular dystrophy is one of the biggest killers of children, especially the kind they have. They have Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And what happens is they get weaker and weaker and weaker, and eventually they get into a chair, and eventually they can't do anything for themselves. They can't comb themselves, they can't dress themselves. They have to have everything done for them. And eventually they get so sick that they catch a cold and they can't fight it. And they get pneumonia and they die. And they don't live to be, you know, old people. They die as young teenagers. And when I found this out, these feelings that have been tormenting all my life, the feelings of guilt, of anger and fear, came back to me. You know, and I felt, the first thing I did is I felt guilty. Like I had done something wrong. And I thought, well, maybe it's because I've been taking all this junk and shooting all this dope. Maybe I caused this. You know, and later on I started to become angry. And I became angry at everybody, and I became angry at God and angry at myself. You know. But like that story where they project all the junk on the goat, I started to do this with my family. I started projecting all my guilt and my anger and my punishment on them. And it got so bad that I couldn't stay with my family. They finally got sick and tired of me and told me to leave. I was driving them crazy. So what I did is I moved out of the house and I lived by myself for a year and a half. And during that time, I escaped and worked. I used to go from one job and work 8 hours, and then I used to go to another job and work 8 hours, and then I'd go home and I'd crash. I didn't want to think. And I did this day after day after day after day. I never missed a day of work. I never took a vacation. I never took any time off. I just worked and worked and worked. And there at the end, I wasn't going to meetings anymore, and I wasn't talking to anybody. And when I meet people on the program, they say, Pepe, how you been? I haven't seen you. How you doing? I tell them, I'm fine. How's the family? Oh, we're fine. I wouldn't cop out to anything. Because if they saw that Pepe was dying inside, Pepe was hurting, Pepe was scared to death, I was a man out here, but inside I was just a scared little child, you know, frightened to death, dying inside, crying inside all the time. If they saw this, they would think I was weak, and they would thought I was a punk, and I never copped out to nothing. I would not let you in. And, you know, later on, I began to realize, no wonder I've never been able to form any kind of intimate relationships with anybody. I was never close to my father and my mother. I was never close to my family. And even later on, when I started living with women, I was never close. You know, and I didn't love anybody because I didn't know how to love. I didn't even love myself. How could I love somebody else? And I could never get intimate. I could never get close. I could never let you in. And because of that, I've been a very lonely man all my life. And there at the end of that year and a half, living by myself and just hiding, you know, I was very seriously thinking about taking my life. And I came back to the program. But I remember, you know, I had always, all my life, I've been trying to talk to God and get close to God. This is something I've always had all my life. I've always had the desire to feel His presence. And I did one day. I did one day. And for a long time, I didn't know that I did because of the language I used. And what it was is one time, right after I found out about my children, I had a business at this time, and it was just before everything went to pieces and I lost everything because I couldn't take care of business. I remember going to the office and I got a bunch of estimates that I had to make that day, and I think I made one or two and I couldn't concentrate. And I was in the truck and I just started crying. And I went out and I parked by the little park and I went for a walk in this park. And I sat in this bench and all of a sudden I started talking to God. And what I told God was, I said, "You dirty son of a bitch. You dirty motherfucker." He said, "You know, I've been clean for all these years. I'm not stealing anymore. You know, I'm trying to do the right thing. And what are you doing to me? You know, you fuck me again." And I told him, "You know what? I'm never going to ask you for anything. I said, you can get all your goodies and all your, you can shove them up your ass." And for a half an hour, I cussed him out and cussed him out. And you know what? After that, I felt better. I felt better. And the thing about it was, I really felt that he hurt me. And later on, I began to realize that, you know what? There isn't anything I can do that will offend God. Me? Offend God? You know what? God doesn't care how we come to Him, as long as we come to Him. And I began to realize this. I had really made contact with God. That was the first time I really felt His presence. And I felt better. You know, I don't talk to Him that way anymore. But I talk to Him all the time now. But you know what? It happened that way. Maybe that was the way I was able to make my breakthrough. And after I began to really realize that really I was not guilty, that all these things that I thought about myself, that I thought were so terrible about me, were more illusions about myself. And I began to let them go. When I began to understand that, you know, when I took my fifth step and found that the nature of all my problems is my ego, my fear, these illusions. That's the nature of all my problems. You know? And that's when I was really able to ask God, humbly ask Him to remove my shortcomings. Because of myself, I cannot do it. And the way I do it is I ask God to come into my mind and do whatever correction He has to do, because I don't have the ability to do it. I ask my higher power to help me see it different, to help me change my perception, because everything I see with fear. I've been conditioned that way all my life. And since I've asked Him to do it, that shift in my perception is happening. Things that I used to see with fear, I now see with love. I see with light, meaning deep understanding. And remember that understanding and patience and all these things that we call spiritual principles are attributes of love. See them with love. And when I begin to understand that, the steps really begin to make sense to me. And the step that says that, you know, we continue to seek personal inventory, and when we're wrong, promptly admit it. I catch myself all the time whenever I'm getting angry, I say, I'm going into some form of fear. I'm seeing something with fear that's making me angry. I'm going into, and I have to find a little place where I can be quiet and try to center myself again and find the love within me and hang on. Find the God within me. And within a very short time, I'm at peace again. You know, today I'm beginning to experience some of that peace that I never knew before. Peace of mind. You know, this situation with my family, it's much, much better. Physically speaking, it's a lot worse. But you know what? The fear is not there anymore. In fact, there's a lot of love and a lot of happiness and a lot of laughing and joking in my home. You know, and there's a lot of togetherness and a lot of warmth. In fact, I can't remember how long it's been since I've really yelled at my wife or my kids. They're two beautiful people for me to be yelling at them. I don't do that anymore. I don't wanna contribute those vibrations into this world anymore. I absolutely don't. And I try to stay away from all the controversies and all the things that are going on in my fellowship, because that's not what this fellowship is all about. I could care less whether they read the new literature or the old literature or the first chapter in Alice in Wonderland. I don't give a damn. Yeah. The primary purpose of this fellowship is to simply do this for a moment, for an instant. Forget about the controversy, for an instant. Forget about all the problems we have in our lives. Forget about our money problems, our relationship problems. Just for a moment, forget about that. And for a moment, focus your mind on the new man that's just coming in here with his mind full of that fear and that conflict. And if you can really concentrate on what he needs for a moment, forget your selfishness, forget your wants and your needs, and for a moment concentrate on him, just for a moment. And if you can do that, then you will understand what this program is really, really all about. It's about love. That's all it is. Love is the only thing that's going to heal this. That's going to heal this disease. You know, it's not going to cure it because there's no such thing as a cure. But we can become healed. You know, we can recover. Recovery is possible. But it's the love in this program that does that. And if I could turn my will and my life over to the care of God, and by God I mean His thought system, then it'll happen. And you know, step 12 talks about having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these things. Then I share it with the new man. That the principle of that step is a principle of service. Service to God as I understand Him, service to my fellow man, and service to myself. And in this program we have such an opportunity to share that love. And sometimes we have to share a little more than just our experience and our strength and our hope. Sometimes we have to share a little money, or we have to open our homes to these people and share our food. And if I have an extra shirt and he doesn't have one, I should give it to him. Because really I'm not giving him anything. What I'm doing is I'm sharing with him what is truthfully, rightfully his. See, God made this world and everything in it for all of us. And we should share it with each other, because when we share with each other, who are we really sharing it with? The more I give you, the more I have. The more I deny you, the less I have. And this is why I never say no when I'm asked to come and say a few words. I don't care where I have to go. If I can get there, I'll get there. Because every time I leave with more than when I got here. It's sort of like I take it out of my left-hand pocket, and I put it in my right-hand pocket. It never leaves me. You know, there is a law called the law of affluence. And what that law says is that whenever you give, whatever it is that you're giving, if it's money, or whether it's clothing, or whether it's shelter, or whether it's companionship, or friendship, understanding, whatever it is, if we give it with love, and I'm talking about unconditional love, because if it is an unconditional love, it's nothing. You're not giving anything. But when you give it, then that thing that you're giving becomes a shadow of that love. And like when you walk around, your shadow follows you, that thing that you're giving will always follow you. You will never be without. And I know that to be true because it's happened in my life over and over and over and over again. I have never been without. I have never had to sleep on the street. I've always had enough to wear. I've always had enough to eat. I've always had a little money in my pocket. I've never been without. And I have opened my homes and I have opened my heart. Because this is what I want. This is what I'm looking for. In fact, this is why I came tonight. I came here because I want you to love me, and I want to say that I love you. Because that's the only thing that's real. That's the only thing that matters in this world. And this is what this program is all about. This is what this 12 steps is all about. They're about teaching only love. That's what it is. And the more we teach, the more we learn. And this is what I want to teach, because this is what I want to learn. Because I cannot give you what I don't have. So with that, I'm going to say thank you very much. God bless all of you. And until we meet again.